So Felix has thankfully already taken some of my moderation duties by posing questions, because now I think you have something to respond to. His last party pooping obviously is addressing questions and issues to the other three people here on the panel, so I guess you have something to respond to that.
Yes, of course. But just saying we don't need virtual machines is a bit missing the problem, the usage of virtual machines. Did you never use a piece of dynamically programming, Perl eval statement or something like this? How would it do it? You write the C program for each of these problems. How do you do fast prototyping? And so on. So I think you're missing half of the... Pardon?
Use a real programming language.
What is a real programming
language?
Andreas
wants to say you should use Dylan.
What is a real programming language?
Okay, I'm taking the mic here so that everybody can hear me. Well, a real programming language is one that combines the performance of code written in C,
yes,
with the ease of use of so-called scripting languages like Perl, Python, Ruby, and what they are called. And it's not like they don't exist. We have them. We have, for instance, Lisp. We have Dylan. We have Objective Camel, etc., etc. So I don't really see the point in so-called scripting languages. I don't see the point in the in splitting your code between that part that has to be efficient and we write it in C with all the buffer overflows and the stuff, and then the part that needs to be scripted by the user. And maintained all of the time, like you have to write interfaces for plugins, etc., etc. So yes, I share the point. So why that splitting of the world? Why continue the Unix madness of having separate processes, of having fast code written in a bad language, and then have slow code written in a slightly better language, which then maybe is maintainable?
Okay.
So much for that.
For the speed, this one is running 100 million loops. It's 200 million statements, and these are the times on my 600 megahertz CPU. So that's for the speed. This is as fast as optimized C or faster. So this is not an argument.
Okay, I should just add as a moderator that this statement from the audience was by Andreas Borg. Andreas Borg, who actually was also a candidate here for the panel, we thought about inviting him to speak about Lisp machines. So I think he might have something like Lisp in mind, which is a proper language that also can be compiled. But maybe we should come back to this basic topic. I think now we're talking about certain implementations or we are certain... speed benefits, but I would like to talk more about the big picture. What really is the vision of the software, the operating system we would like to create? I think Felix has given some provocative thoughts here about this also in his last point. So I still would like to respond respond maybe to these topics. So what really is it what we need? Do we need large frameworks that enable us to do things on a higher level, or do we need to drop these frameworks in order to reduce software complexity? What is really the vision we have for also free operating systems, of course?
First, I should probably respond to the slide. And you said that Hurd is based on 25-year-old design, 30-year-old design, and you also said that the first implementation is usually correct, and I agree. It's fine. So, on a more serious note, if you remove 998,000 cycles from code, I can't account for every cycle in the C library, but you're also removing a lot of features. And those are features that people need. Not all people need all the features, and 99% of the people need present in 1 or 2%. But the point being is that And you should optimize for the common case, but you also need to provide an architecture which can deal with the uncommon rare case. And this is something I was kind of missing. So to answer your question, the demand is obviously there. There's a huge demand for very high-level features. And people are exploiting them if they can get them. But the supply is not there. So I would agree with Tom if he says we have to work on general architectures to fill the gaps. And I think that's true at all three levels. Yeah.
Okay, so there's Felix. Yes, there's somebody in the audience, Felix. And I think also Tom still wants to say something about the question of low level versus framework. So I would like to you both maybe to speak, and then that we have the audience statement.
Yeah, I completely agree what you have said, by the way. But it doesn't solve the problems I'd like to solve. Well, why did Java become so prominent? Not because it was a good technology, but because it standardized on APIs people could use. I mean, you would say the fools could use, but I think there are more fools out there than good programmers. If the C++ world had done this standardization on certain APIs, as I said, on clustering, on calendaring, whatever, I don't think a language like Java wouldn't ever had a chance, but we didn't do it, so we can't complain afterwards. We still don't have these APIs on the Unix world, which I won't want to have there. This is the only thing I wanted to say. Of course, all these frameworks are just overbloat, overkill, whatever. But they have APIs. You can teach people, and they can solve problems with that. My main point is, this discussion doesn't really interest me. I want to solve problems, and I want to solve them fast, and I want to solve them in a modern way, and I just can't. So, what to do?
Alex, you want to say immediately something to that? Yes? Okay.
First of all, I think you have to understand that no matter how many diapers you put on your baby, it's still going to do some messy things. And you can't just create more frameworks and then the bugs will go away. You can't hide bugs by putting more code on them. And the main strive behind software engineering methods and frameworks and middlewares in the last year has been, last decades even, has been to try to make it easier for people who don't know anything about computers to write code. And there have been rapid prototyping tools and code generators, and the result is that we have an even more messy code out there that no one actually wants to maintain. So I think it's of course you are right, we have problems that we need to solve, but the problem may be solved in the shorthand by having some klutz try to click together some piece of code that would then solve a reasonable part of the actual problem, but you will have to maintain that code, and that's normally much more expensive than actually writing it. So the focus should not be on making writing the code easier or giving the people more tools or better libraries to write the code, but the effort should be on making it easier for people to learn how to do it properly, and then they can do it easy enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would like to pass the mic to the audience, please.
Okay, I'd like to comment on the 90% of the features and the hard ones, that the initial 10% of freedom or whatever. But the thing is, if you look at the Unix history, you have this scheme people call worse is better, so we do what we can do well, and if we can't do it well, we just leave it out because we can solve it properly. So better to the 90%, you absolutely need that everyone needs, and let people solve their own problems for them, because if you try to design for too broad audience, if you try to design to solve world hunger in your operating system, you will just fail. You will end up with a bloated piece of mess that does everything and nothing well, like a GNU/MX or whatever. And to the actual problems of our Unix system, like he said, the buffer overflows or whatever, I think the basic problem we have in our Unix world is the use of C strings, where we have null terminated strings. That's really causing really, really big mess. And if the folks on their PDP 7 had decided not to save that one character at the beginning of a string for like Pascal strings, we had none of those currently, even if the C code was still as crappy as it is today in most programs.
OK. Any takers?
Yeah, he's right.
He's right.
Tom? OK. So then maybe, Fifa, I would like to ask you one question. You say one should teach people to program better instead of making it easier and allow them to write bad code that then somehow gets corrected by a virtual machine, garbage collection, or whatever. But if we go back to that original Unix philosophy, Unix paradigm, as I presented it in the beginning of our session, then I would say, for me personally, as I'm somebody here, I'm a literary philologist, I'm not a programmer, I'm the only non-programmer here on the panel. I would say the freedom that Unix-like systems give to me is that they allow me to program in a very easy way, through shell scripting, for example. I think there is no easier system to program than Unix, because it is so simple. So if you say, you don't want that non-expert programmers or non-skilled programmers program, then isn't that something that goes quite in opposition to the original idea of how Unix works, and that there is no real division between a user and a programmer, because using a command line system also means programming it more or less?
The distinction is where you see where you draw the line between programming and customizing. Writing a shell script or a small C filter or a Z script or HWK script or whatever is, of course, can be seen as programming. But in my broad vision, I consider that more customizing, because that's what administrators do, and those are not paid to program, and they are not considered programmers. It is programming, but if you draw the line there, then of course it should be easiest to do small things well. But you have to see most of the ISP problems when one ISP gets bought by another one is trying to integrate the supposedly easy to write Perl and shell scripts that one of the ISPs left behind. And while they were easy, most of these languages, they are very elegant to program, but they are very hard to understand afterwards. So you could call them write-only language, because if you wrote them yourself, you understand them for maybe half a year. And if you have to look at them afterwards, they are quite hard. So that's more customizing than actual programming.
Leo, do you have to say something to this?
Yes.
A Perl expert?
No, I'm not so much a Perl expert. I'm a Perl user. But you can write bad code in any language. You can write it in C, you can write it in Perl. In Perl, you can easily write bad code, because Perl provides many possibilities, but you can write a nice looking code and good code too. That's not an argument. It's right when you say there are bad programmers. Yes, that's okay. But it's not the problem of the programming languages. And sometimes you need the dynamically features of Perl or Python or something like this. You cannot easily express everything in C. And it's not better if you write it in C and it runs faster if you don't need the speed. Not every application needs the ultimate speed. So there are of course many problems which you better express in C. But there are obviously a lot of programs and a lot of programs out there that are written in Perl and Python, in Ruby, in Tickle, and so on. So there is a demand for these languages. And what Perl wants to provide is a common base for these languages. These languages are existing, and we want to provide a common base, plus a new base for the upcoming Perl 6. And we want to provide common libraries, so you have only one library which reduces code bloat. You don't have a Python, a Perl library, and so on and so on. This is the final goal for all languages when they are finally based on that one machine.
It's quite a fallacy to say if you combine the libPerl and libPython and libRuby into one library, you have less bloat. You actually have more bloat. You carry all the language backend glue code in your program. If you use a Perl program and you run it on a backend that also has the Python glue code in it, then you have more bloat and not less bloat. But pointing to Andreas, there's no inherent reason why you shouldn't have the power of C and the flexibility of Perl in a programming language. There's no one forcing you to use C on Unix. It's just the standard way. There are other languages that are much better than C, but it's no, you shouldn't say if you use Unix, it's C. Most of the programs are written in C, I write in C, but there are other languages and you should look at them before dismissing them and say you need eval statement in Perl for that. There are other ways, there are always other ways. That's part of the philosophy that you shouldn't constrain your users in one point of view.
Of course, yes.
So we have one more question by Andreas Bock in the audience.
I have yet another comment to make. This panel is called Beyond Unix. And after hearing all of you talk, I have the impression that you all think, well, Unix is basically okay, and POSIX is a fine standard. Nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, have you looked at single semantics in the context of threads on Unix recently? It's not even well specified, and it's different on every implementation. And it's going beyond that. When you say we need programming languages where people make less errors, where it's easier to program, why not extend that to the kernel itself? And if you're talking about concepts, what about the distinction between kernel space and user space? It could be kicked completely out of the place. Why not have a single address space operating system? You can still have protection domains so nothing fails, even if your programming language makes a mistake in allowing access it shouldn't, which a good programming language doesn't. I don't see any visions here. It's like microkernels. I think it was Andrew Tenenbaum who told Linus Torvalds that it was a bad idea to start a monolithic kernel, and that was in 1993. Virtual machines, I think some people are old enough to remember USSD, Pascal, which did the very thing. And I don't see a vision here. I don't see something going beyond Unix. And we need to do something about Unix because it's bad. It's the API sucks. You have the concept of system calls, of IO controls, and you're pushing more and more functionality on top of it, trying to graft it into it, and it doesn't get any better from it, it gets worse. You have the problem that you're implementing the same functionality over and over and over and over again. You have code which is in the kernel, then identical code outside the kernel in one library, and then you have it in another programming language in a third library. You cannot even make a function call into a different program because the concept just doesn't exist. It's in a different address space. You have to write IPC code to talk to that. You talk about attacking security problems by compartmentalization of code. So instead of just stopping to use C to write security relevant software, you're thinking about limiting damage. It's still not the point where you say we have a concept which is better than Unix here. It's all getting Unix a little bit better. And quite frankly, it was a good idea by Microsoft to get David Cutler and have him work on the operating system. I remember the times of Windows 3.11, where Unix was vastly, vastly, vastly superior. These days, my Linux is crashing just as often as my Windows is crashing, because it's the same concepts. You have a kernel written in C, and you have a protection, and sometimes something crashes, and then you restart it. And hey, even the Win32 API, in a lot of places, it's cleaner than the Unix API. The Unix API is a mess. It's historically been a... Unix started life as a game loader. It's because two guys at AT&T wanted to play space travel without the boss notifying it in the process accounting of the Multics operating system. So they looked for an unused computer and started hacking my very first own operating system. And Unix became successful, not because it was excellent technically. It was better than what everybody else had, and they started sending source code to the universities. Unix is successful because it was an open source project in the 70s, not because it's technically good. And yeah, I think that's what I wanted to say, and maybe you have something to add here.
Yeah, Markus.
Yeah, I can. You are, of course, completely right that there is a lot that can be discussed in this context. I mean, persistency, for example, alone is a huge topic, but it is also an unproven concept. We have to, and in my opinion, you raised a lot of topics, and all those topics can be discussed, but if you talk beyond Unix, then there is the word Unix in there. And if you say, let's totally forget about it and dream up something or implement something completely radically different, then, my God, I want to see it. But it's simply true that Unix is a de facto standard and POSIX, and I don't really believe in somebody telling me, let's totally forget about everything POSIX, Unix, and all the millions of lines of code and applications and users and developers who exist. And I also think that you can have a perfectly nice and elegant design and it's totally useless crap. So the situation is we have Unix, and if we want to go beyond it, then this first needs this first means that we have to deal with Unix as it exists and see where can we go from here. If you have listened closely to my talk, I've given you a perspective. Not a complete perspective, but a partly perspective that we consider the GNU Hutton framework where Unix is just one personality. And you can put a lot of new ideas into the new service you could be writing for the GNU Hutton, and then you have a gradual change. What I couldn't include in my talk is that, of course, you should then implement protocols between these systems so they can cooperate. But that is really a huge topic, and in my opinion, the topic of the panel assumed that we would start from somewhere and not from a completely white paper, and this something would be Unix.
Okay. Could you also give your name?
I'm Christoph Helwig.
Okay.
Right. He has a speaker from the audience. I think it's quite interesting that he's ranting over Unix here and mentioning things like USCD Pascal that's responsible for one of the worst abnominations in the Unix FileSystem API called Truncate, or mentions POSIX threads, which actually are DEC VMS semantics some guy, some committee placed into Unix and completely screwed us up now. So, well. The thing is, lots of people had ideas how to get better than Unix, but for some strange reason, none of them succeeded. So we get to quotes like, those who don't understand Unix have to reinvent it poorly. I think that pretty much hits the point. Unix came in there, had semantics that people liked. And if you see our today's semantics, like, in some kind resemble what the original Unix had, but we also have much different semantics. We have memory map files, which is actually a concept we had in Multics before, but not in Unix for a long time. So what we call Unix today is actually a set of lots and lots of APIs that came from somewhere, and it shows we have a production operating system here, not some perfect research operating system thingy. Maybe one day we have an approach, grand design that's better and it will just replace it, but by just talking, oh, my Lisp machine is better, you don't get there. Implement it and get it into production. That way you can replace Unix.
First of all, the POSIX threads, if I remember correctly, were actually taken from Sun, and then the committee took them. And Sun took them from VMS.
No, Sun threads are quite differently, actually.
Actually, it's just renamed. They PTH to pthread underscore.
Can you use the microphone? Because not even I can understand you.
Anyway, it's just a small detail. It's not really important. But Markus said you shouldn't just throw everything away and try to do it anew. And I disagree. I say that's the only way we are going to get really new ideas and not just ideas that are constrained by the point of view we have on the world. If we say we take this foundation, it's natural. Most humans do that. You just don't put your house anywhere, but you go where you know the earth is good enough and where you build on rocks and not in the swamp. Yeah, but if you want to try radically new ideas, if you want to get radically better results, you have to try throw away everything. And later you can still say, okay, we could do that without throwing everything away. But to get the good ideas, you need to be allowed as a researcher to throw all the point of views and constraining environmental things away. So it's very important to have that. And I think most of the good ideas in the operating system research in the last years came this way. For example, the exokernel. They said we throw most of the stuff away that even microkernels have put in the kernel, and they put everything, even memory management, mostly outside the kernel. And it's really interesting. Their design says, for example, if you write a web server, then the TCP/IP stack will be put in the application as well. And the compiler can then see that only TCP is used and remove all the UDP stuff, for example, and thus remove stuff from the code path that's not used. And this is a design you would never have dreamed of if you just constrain yourself to Unix semantics. So it is important to throw stuff away, just for the conceptual level.
But Felix, just to ask that question, okay?
I just want to say I totally agree with you. It's important research and that's going on, and you should do it. But what I'm saying is that, I mean, we can talk all day about things we would like to have and how they could be. But if you really want to get down to a practical matter of providing something that people use and start to use, then you have to address the question of transfer, of compatibility. And personally, I'm very skeptical of any system which claims to just throw POSIX away because it's so ugly and provide something that is not as powerful as POSIX.
But so that's exactly what the Herd did, and then they later put a POSIX personality on top of the kernel, so you need to do that.
The Herd was specifically designed with POSIX compatibility in mind. But we have shown that a POSIX, by the way, is not Unix. One shouldn't make the mistake. POSIX is a very flexible standard. They have they drafted the standard. They're drafting it very carefully to avoid implying how the system should be implemented and what is behind it. So we were able and are able, and in the beginning, Herd developers have reviewed POSIX for that, that you can do radical changes while staying compatible. And this is what the current prototype of the Herd shows. It's not a proven POSIX compatible, but it's pretty much there. We have ported 2,000 applications to it. So,
I think we should do research on everything we can imagine to how to make it better, but I mean, Unix works for most of us. I mean, that's the point I want to make here. It's not that bad. I mean, it's just good enough for most of us. Or don't you agree? I mean, we all use it, so it can be that bad.
So there's still enough value in it for recycling, you say?
But yeah, you can see it that way. But let's tell you something else. One Unix principle maybe is these hierarchical file systems. Everybody of us has millions of files on his hard disk. In a few years, we will have billions of files on our hard disk. Will we ever find that stuff? I mean, is this the right approach? The fine thing about Unix, you can have different file systems. You can implement others based on maybe database engine, whatever, to find stuff there. That's what I like about Unix. Even if you don't like certain parts of it, I mean, if you don't like the kernel, of course, you have to do more. I mean, but show me the code. Then we will speak about if your concept is better. But you can exchange file systems, you can replace whatever. I think these are the problems we are facing. We will have billions of data in the future on our hard drives, and this is more important to me how to solve that.
Maybe Andreas can now show the code. I remember him showing some code when he demonstrated Lisp machines 2 years ago at the Chaos Computer Congress, but I'm not sure whether you're going to talk about that.
It's well, some things I want to address. Mm-hmm. One is the backwards compatibility issue. And again, I'm looking at the Microsoft example. I know that's a hot topic, so I'm doing it on purpose to tease you a little. They had that Windows 95 nightmare where they had MS-DOS and then had a GUI system on top of it. And it's like the basement was broken. You could they added stuff on top and stuff on top and stuff on top, and it still was bad. And what they were doing for backwards compatibility is just putting all the 16-bit stuff into an emulator box. And so that's the vision I have for some for a system following Unix. Not try to build on the broken system on the bottom yet another layer to maybe hide the problems because it won't work. Do it the other way around. Build a solid foundation for your system and then have an emulator box. I very much like the approach of putting Linux on a microkernel because that allows virtualization. Because step by step you can take away hardware access from the Unix system and just provide a stub interface talking to a real device driver somewhere else, which is believed to be more secure. And so it's, I think that's a possibility. You can't just throw away everything and come up with a new system with one or two applications and expect people to change. I agree. But we have to provide a migration path which makes it possible to get rid of all the Unix idiosyncrasies in the end. And for instance, file systems, one of the things you need to think about is whether you want to have file systems at all in the end. Because with the current development of magnetic RAMs being as fast as RAMs, just that they don't lose their data if you turn them off, you maybe need different concepts. Maybe you can do something different than file systems. And but it goes beyond that. Look at, for instance, the struggle to come up with a real, really good permission system on Unix. You have that old backwards compatible read, write, execute for group users other. Then you have access control lists, which you have on some file systems and have in some tools and in some APIs, and it's all not compatible. And it's in the way everywhere. Look at the way, for instance, strings are handled. Now you have UTF-8, and you can't even guess what representation your file system name on disk uses because Unix has no API for that. There's so much broken stuff in it. We can't just try to fix everything. We need to throw it away, and we need backwards compatibility to keep the old applications. But we need newer, more radical ideas. And it's been shown to be possible. If you look at the history of computing, you had Lisp machines, you had Smalltalk machines, you had different approaches towards operating systems. I mean, today people don't even believe you could write a kernel in something different than C. So much brainwashed are we by the Unix concepts that we can't think beyond that. And I have some code to show. I have the old code of the old machines to show that somebody has been doing it before. Talking about Lisp machines, the reason they died is because they were used by the military and they were 10 times as expensive as Suns. So universities started buying Sun machines, they were cheaper. You still pay $5,000 for a license of a Lisp machine. These days, these very day, it's not possible to get it cheaper. But I also have some code to show going into the right direction. Some code written in Dylan running on top of L4 with the perspective of putting a Unix next to it for backwards compatibility. And frankly, I'm not satisfied with Unix. I'm using it. I'm not using it because it's good. I'm using it because it's open source and I can hack it. But I don't trust the data on my systems. I know that there are people out there who are clever enough to exploit all of my systems. And I'm not bad in computer security, and still I can't get my machine secure. Still I have the problem that there's a time window of 1, 2, 3, or 4 weeks where half a dozen or maybe 2 dozen people outside could exploit my machines. I don't want that anymore. And we're not getting rid of that. I mean, the first internet worm that was in 1988, which was based on buffer overflows, we're still struggling with buffer overflows in 2004. We still have discussions on the Linux kernel mailing list where Linus Torvalds is thinking about string representation. And hey, string representation is something that should have been solved 30 years ago, maybe even 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Any takers? Okay, for me there is too much consensus here on the panel.
Yeah, so I have we all agree, but I just want to add one note. If you put it in a box, you are not compatible. If you put it in a box, it's in a box. You can still run your programs, but there's no interaction. So this is probably one point you would have to find some ways to transfer data and use the applications side by side. So there's things that can be done. But and well, so far so good.
Let me be the doomsday priest for a moment, because I'm going to say while it looks good now, most code looks good initially. And then after years, it gets worse and worse. And then someday, your son will come and throw it away and do it anew. So while we don't know how we can make it not happen this way, I think it's too early to start writing new operating systems, because Unix was very lean and very elegant in the beginning for the time too. And just after years, we found out what the shortcomings were in the design. And many of them were not thought to be bad initially. And there are things that you are deciding right now that don't look bad right now, but will look bad in a few years. You can't think of everything initially. So unless we have solved the software engineering problem, I think it's too early, and it's too arrogant to start writing new operating systems now, because it's time wasted that could be spent on solving software engineering problems.
This gives me exactly the keyword I would like to address now. We have been on purpose being talking about software engineering here. And most of the presentations have been about giving new foundations to software engineering. What I would be interested in, because also so many people asked me that before the panel, people who don't have a Unix background, who don't use free operating systems, what does really change for the user? We have heard several different ideas, both on the panel and in the audience, how to either design the existing systems differently or design new systems from scratch, or what has to be done about certain aspects of the system. But what does it really change for someone who just wants to use his computer to surf the web and do some word processing? What is the larger picture? How would, for example, GNOME 2010 look different from a GNOME as it is now when it runs on top of on Mono, maybe with some dependencies on Parrot, and using GNU Hurd as the kernel and not Linux? Just to give some stupid, simple example. So what is in it for the users and not just for the developers?
I think we haven't progressed one single bit in the last 10 years to make people more productive with their computers. I am not faster than I was 10 years ago and not more productive. That's my real point of view. We haven't progressed any bit.
Well, yes, Parrot will not address the or change the user space. It will maybe change the user space programmer. It can be an advancement when the libraries are united, when you don't have different Python or Perl libraries, but you just have one Parrot library providing the functionality. But I don't think that there are influences on the user space.
You have further heard GNOME could tap on the possibility to extend the operating system instead of trying to fix problems in the operating system by hiding them. And thus, GNOME code could become to make more sense, be leaner. And for specific applications like sound, you could also have software real-time and so. But the problem is that such extensions and features would be system-specific. And it would be difficult to provide them in software that is supposed to run on many different operating systems. So we have to see.
I think a safe prediction is that GNOME will be at least an order of magnitude slower than today, and the hardware will be about 8 times faster than today, thus the net effect will be a slowdown.
Safe and people say. Will still fight for Emacs versus VI.
Christoph, was that your statement, or did you want to say something else?
Well, actually, I did want, but Marcus already took part of it from me away, because I wanted to refer to his talk early on where he said the user file systems and Hurd would allow to avoid this GNOME VSF stuff and whatever. But as he later said, those GNOME folks are much more interested in being portable to all kinds of Unixes and are just not interested to them.
for example, I talk to the GNOME folks because there's lots of user space file system modules for the Linux kernel, so you can use user space file systems. And we talk to the GNOME folks whether they would be interested in working with us to have these always going through the kernel VFS part and then using that. And they said they were absolutely uninterested because they want their own abstraction so it works on Solaris and whatever. And actually for the next GNOME version, they're actually changing the semantics away from the Unix semantics for the GNOME VFS. So it's going in a completely different universe and another 24 layers of abstraction in between. So we have a fair chance to upload all the new cycles, the new Pentium 5, 6, and 7 will give us.
Good riddance.
Yes, this is actually to now step out of my role as a moderator. I think this is something I've been observing myself by just observing other people who are not so literate computer users, that there has been a tendency in software development to make things easier by making things more complex under the hood and providing more abstraction layers. And I think this might be an erroneous observation of how people think and use computers, because I think people get much more scared by files on their computer in their system directories that they can no longer understand than by lots of libraries which supposedly make their operating system easier. I think a good example of that is the transition from the classical Mac OS to the Unix-based Mac OS 10, that many people refuse to make the step from the old Mac OS to Mac OS 10 because they can no longer understand the structure of the system underneath and they can no longer figure out what the files on the computer mean. So. I wonder, this would be my question to you, Felix, because you represent that trend in development of making things simpler and not more complex, if that would be also something like a holy grail, making things so simple that we somehow can bridge the gap between developers and users, or is that rather out of your focus when you say one shouldn't allow stupid people to program, for example?
No, I think that's very that's one thing we should be striving at. We should try to make the system so simple everyone can understand it. But I don't think that's going to happen. You can see it with cars, for example. The trend is not to make the car easier, but to make it impossible to open the engine that flap. So because people would be scared and the manual doesn't explain anymore how to repair things, and you have more computers than you have whatever in your car. So it's the trend is to hide the complexity, and then if something fails, it fails more catastrophically than before. And we should try to do everything we can to reverse that trend, but frankly, I'm not seeing it happen. So if you have any ideas how we can achieve that, please take the mic.
Maybe we could collect closing statements to that on the panel, because now we are running towards the end of our time. I will make a short announcement about another project here at Wizards of Oz at the end of the panel, but maybe I would ask you, starting with Tom and then going over to Marcus, for your final thoughts on our discussion and your standpoint.
Take some time.
Or maybe I can ask you a direct question. It seemed to me that, at least in your presentation, you took an opposite position towards Felix, in that you looked at a kind of real-world business application perspective.
Yeah.
And that you say problems have to be solved on that level, and we simply have to work with the legacy systems that we have and somehow make them interoperable and make the frameworks more powerful. That seems to me a different idea.
I mean, that's my daily business, all these legacy systems and Linux migrations and whatever. So this is important for me, of course. The fundamental principles should be keep it simple, and this is in a lot of modern frameworks, this is just fundamentally not true. These frameworks are so complicated. I mean, they don't fit your brain, as you said. I mean, each week I see new specifications of something. You just can't get that all. So, but nevertheless, you need this integration. So this is my way of getting world domination. First integrate everything and then begin to change subsystems the way you want it to run, and maybe in the long time have your architecture or your applications migrating to this new architecture. I don't think we can, per top-down approach, say to the developers you have to do it that way or that way. We just have to make them run together and then maybe see the benefits of this approach, and then maybe we can change that. The question also is, and this was, I think, this virtual file system stuff, do we build a free operating system model which is specific to that for Linux or BSD, whatever? Do we build a model which works only there, or do we do it cross-platform? I think the first approach is certainly to have an open source enterprise architecture cross-platform from the server to the client, to Windows, to Mac OS X, to Linux, which runs everywhere. I mean, of course, these frameworks are always more complicated, but to have OpenOffice running on Windows is maybe this kind of first steps, because you can do it, not by doing a full scale migration to Linux or whatever. So my vision would really to have a cross-platform thing, but this makes it even more complicated. But that way we can get world domination. Otherwise, I don't think these 95% of Microsoft on the desktop are not so easy to change. These are 95%. So this is the first step. And in the long run, we can build our own architecture, but we have to think about that. And Microsoft has a lot of interesting projects. I mean, I'm very interested in them, because I think they face some fundamental problems we also have to solve in the Unix world, and really don't do. I mean, the mono approach is what possible approaches by taking the same framework, but it's, I don't propose to be that the approach to follow, but we should solve some fundamental software problems, and we don't. I mean, the kernel stuff is, for me, is quite irrelevant, because the fight is at quite other places today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes, well, as Tom has said already, I think that software should be multi-platform and not dependent on some proprietary operating systems or not, or should not run on Linux or should run on Linux. I think it should run everywhere. And Perl is running everywhere, so Parrot will try to achieve that finally, that Parrot will run everywhere. So you can install it now on a Mac OS X, and you can install it on Windows, you can run it on Linux, of course, and it runs. It's a good thing. It was already mentioned that the POSIX standard has some shortcomings, and there's one more. There are many implementations of it. This is a bit of a problem to write machines like Parrot, and you want to get a signal handling that is not broken in multi-threaded programs, for example. And yes, signal handling is well known that it's broken in various implementations. But yes, I think it's a good thing to think about better implementations of that. It will just add one another machine. We will have to port it, but maybe that it's less broken than a Linux kernel 2.2 or something like that.
I think we have seen that there is a huge demand for rich complexity and infrastructure, especially to enable people to work on new features without getting even more choices and confusion. As long as Unix is just good enough, we will not see a radical change. I am thinking that this will be at least for the next years, we will just be fixing things here and there. But I think that the demand is growing, and the development goes towards more complexity, and then we will need some way to deal with it. And we have seen several approaches, and there are even more. I don't think anybody can predict something about how it will look, but there will be changes.
Okay, so I know I will leave you frustrated because we haven't given you the definite answer to all the problems. We have given you certain opinions, different standpoints, some agreements, some disagreements. But I think what we achieved in these 2 hours is highlight problems and really highlight why it might make sense to just put up such a headline as beyond the Unix paradigm question mark. So I'm happy that we had this discussion here and with such excellent speakers. Ask for your applause. And one final announcement I have to make. I was told that there is now a workshop exactly at this time, 7 o'clock in 2 minutes. And which is creating a .com in 24 hours. There is a performance art business project. The mission is to create a .com business from scratch in 24 hours. That means designing and programming a complete and useful web application, recruiting people, doing marketing, creating investment programs, and much more. After 24 hours, the complete business will be sold on an eBay auction, and everyone involved will be rich. You are. You are free to join in and help out, and you will get paid in valuable stock. So if you're a designer, programmer, business person, all-around genius, or what, just want to be part of a beta test, please let us know. And you, as far as I understood, they somehow meet outside the building or ask at the info desk, because I don't have the definite information here. So maybe we should do that instead of ponder all these design problems of Unix and get rich within 24 hours. Thank you very much.
So do you have a special arrangement with the patent office so the software patents go through by tomorrow?
Maybe, no, I don't know.
I wonder why nobody mentioned Reactos, which is completely different than Unix, and might be a way to achieve world.
Sorry?
Reactos, which is a free software implementation of.
Yeah, actually, somebody proposed to put this on the panel, and we didn't put it up because maybe this is our Unix-ish arrogance that we didn't discuss it here. Yeah, it's not beyond, it's behind. Excuse our arrogance. Unfortunately, we have to stop the discussion here because our time is over. Thank you.